If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined, as always, by the man who helped my wrestling fandom in my younger years before I became an old fogey, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Kenny. Yeah, I'm doing really good, and you know, I was happy to contribute to your wrestling upbringing. You know, I am the educator. Actually, did you notice before on Twitter, just shortly before we recorded this, Cassius Ohno was a trending topic? The wrestling genius. Did you notice that, Kenny?
No, why?
Yeah, he put out a tweet asking people to ask him questions about all sorts of different wrestling-related topics. And he put a ton of effort into each one of those answers. So, you know, congrats, round of applause to Cassius. I was blown away, Kenny. You know, it takes a lot to impress me, as you know.
It does. Well, good for him. I guess go and check out his Twitter and see what he was saying. We have loads and loads of stuff to talk about. I feel a bit in a daze because we're recording this on Tuesday.
I know the reason why, Kenny. I know the reason why.
Okay,
why? Let me just interject here. We need to know, is Inside the Ropes going to release an official statement on the Harry and Meghan crisis?
Look, I feel that this issue is one that a lot of people are going to be angry about, but we are going to stay, just as we did with Brexit on this, very neutral. So to all the royals out there that are pro-royalists, you're going to get through this. It's going to be okay. The two people who are very rich are going to remain very rich. It will be fine. You can still call them prince and princess. Who gives a fuck? Kevin, who could possibly care either way? Do you know what I mean? Whether you like them or whether you don't, who cares? The thing that got me was, I know you got me on one already.
I was thinking that maybe this was what had you in a daze.
Well, now it does.
I thought you were being serious for a moment there. I didn't really think that.
What about this? Prince Harry said in an interview or something, he said, you know, that the paparazzi following him around reminds him of the thing that killed his mother. And you're like, you wonder why he fucking wants to move to Canada and fuck off? Of course he does. Anyway, the thing that's got me in a daze was I was obviously down in Blackpool for the UK takeover weekend. I'm then going to be going down to London tomorrow for the big BT launch. You had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Finn, you know, are they going to be doing anything? They are. They're doing a massive BT launch day in London where there's going to be like a double-decker bus going around central London.
Kenny, I'm available for consultancy services. I'm available.
You're available? You know? Okay. I mean, the thing is, I feel like you're like another version of like, if we sat you down in front of someone, we just don't know what you'd ask them. Like, you'd be the one sitting beside Stephanie. You know, and then all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, you'd be escorted off the bus. You know what happened? You asked him about Randy Savage. You had to take him off.
Hey, Kenny, my motto is, or one of my many mottos is, to sin by silence when you should protest makes cowards of men.
There you go. There's a T-shirt. Very short and sweet.
Sometimes you've got to ask the difficult questions. And if that results in you being thrown off the bus, well, so be it.
Listen, I'm saying nothing. They're doing this big bus, and I think they've got like Ric Flair. I heard Ric Flair's name. I don't know if I think he's over. Paige, Kurt Angle, I think Stephanie's going to be there. So anyway, they're dropping all these people off at different media outlets throughout the day. I'm going to be down there for something. There is a party at night. It's kind of funny because, like, there's been a few people just been like, how do you get an invite to this BT party? And it's like, I've never understood, and I don't know if you've come across this when you were going to like press things in the past. I've never been the guy who's like, I want to take a photo with the wrestlers when I interview them. It's just not really, I feel a bit weird about it. But there's so many people who like, when there's a sniff of a party with wrestlers hanging about, it's like, everybody wants to go. But yeah. Everybody, do I know somebody who knows somebody who works at BT, or, you know, does my friend run the, I don't know, Lancaster Gazette and get us in? Whatever it is.
Actually, one time in the early days of Superstars of Wrestling, the real long-time readers will know this one. I did an interview with, it was my first ever interview, actually, it was with Van Hammer and Johnny B. Badd, later Matt. And I was pictured with Van Hammer, and we were doing a bicep pose.
Wow. Do you still have that photo?
Well, I mean, I've tried to buy up all the copies of that magazine and I've burnt them in the hope that no one else will ever see them. You know, with that little, like, knot in a piece of string on my arm versus Van Hammer. I don't know what I was thinking there, Kenny. I don't know what I was thinking. There's been a lot of moments in life where I look back and say, what the hell were you thinking? So, but just to answer your question, I was once one of those people, but I certainly am not now.
Well, I've always been very, like, I remember there used to be somebody who would do the filming for Inside the Ropes, and he really great guy, he would come along to do the stuff at WrestleMania. And he kept wanting to get like a photo with each wrestler as we did the interviews. And I remember saying, can you just make it like, out of the 10 people we're interviewing, pick two. Pick the two that you like the most and get those photos. But there's a weird thing where sometimes, like when we were there on Sunday with Triple H was there in the morning, they wanted to do like a group media photo. And Ollie and I were just standing in the corner like, we're good. Like, we're good. We're packing up. But it got to a point where everybody else in the room had went over and we were the only two who hadn't, and everybody was looking over at us as if, like, what? So we ended up having to go over and be in the photo because it would have been harder for us to explain why we didn't want to be in the photo, which is just a weird... The whole thing's very strict. I just like to get there, do my interview and leave. I'm better at all that sort of stuff. I mean, now the thing is, in terms of the party... If there was a free bar and free food and I didn't have to be on a 9 p.m. plane home, of course I'd go. Because as you know, Finn, everything tastes better when it's free.
Absolutely. Absolutely. FOC. Three best letters in the alphabet, free of charge.
So they're doing their big press thing tomorrow. I'm going down to do some interview stuff with some people. So that should be good. But yeah, so I'm a bit all over the place. I've not had a chance to watch I had full intent to watch the Tessa Blanchard Sami Callihan match in the Impact pay-per-view, but this morning it was a case of I either watch Raw, which I know we have to cover, or watch that match. So there's so much for us to talk about today, but the first thing I actually want to bring up very quickly, because somebody on Twitter had actually tweeted us about this not about 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago. JJ Dean had responded to a John Pollock clip, which was the clip of Triple H making the joke about Paige. And he just said that he was interested in our thoughts on it. So you've seen the clip. What do you make of the whole thing? Because it's blown up on Twitter, as people would say.
It's blown up. It absolutely has. I mean, it's upset Paige. Paige has tweeted about it. Paige's boyfriend's tweeted about it. He's not happy either. So, I mean, I don't think it was said with any malice, but it's upset her. So... how do you really... You can sit here and defend it and say, oh, yeah, it wasn't malicious, and I don't believe it was, but it has caused offence to the person that the joke was about. So I think Triple H really needs to give her a call and sort this one out. And she can then make some sort of public statement about that. But, I mean, I don't think he said it. I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's a joke he's made about himself in the past, isn't it? You know, about... the children that I might not be aware that I have. So it is a joke. It's a joke that a male character or a male person would say. It's not a joke you really would make about a woman, is it? So, I mean, you could say he's made that joke about himself. And okay, but you know, anyone can make jokes about themselves. You're fair game about making jokes about yourself. He's made the joke about Paige. It's obviously upset her. I think he needs to have a word with her, and I think he needs to apologise. What do you think, Kenny? I know you were there at the time when he said it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know, echo what I've just said.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've got to admit, like, we all kind of nervously laughed when he said it, because we were just like, because he was very much trying to be like, let's make this a lighthearted, fun conversation, so, you know, we kind of laughed along or whatever. And I didn't think enough at the time. I mean, but like, I kind of echo what you say. I don't think he meant it with any ill intent. I think he probably should apologize to her. If she's upset about it, that's her right. If she's upset, I totally get it. She's had a really hard time with everything. But I think people either want it to be one thing or the other. They want it to be like, he's a cretin for saying it, and she needs to, you know, get an apology, or, you know, fuck her.
She's too thin-skinned. You know, it's just a joke. Yeah. You know, what's she doing? You know, it's just a laugh. He's clearly was making a joke. It did amuse me when he had to prompt people to laugh. There's like a pause before everyone laughed. That was the real humor there.
It was funny. But the thing is, it's a grey area. I think that I don't think he meant any ill intent by it. Like you said, it's just the kind of jokes that he has made before. I don't think he thought about it in that way. She's upset. Hopefully he now goes and has a word with her and sort of says sorry to her. And you know, hopefully it'll blow over. So
I'm sure it will. Yeah. I think he just thought this is just such a ridiculous comment for a man to say about a woman that no one's going to take it seriously. Which, when you think about it, it is. But it's upset her. He needs to have a word with her. He needs to sort it out. I'm sure he will do it if it hasn't happened already.
So, last week, The Miz was a guest on WWE Backstage, and he had he was having fun on the show, and Miz was talking about, you know, changing the culture, you know, making a joke about what Punk had said when he initially appeared. And anyway, so then Punk responded to The Miz. I'm trying to get the exact verbiage here. You got it?
I'm not saying this in the
air. So what CM Punk said, where the bloody hell is the... See, when people delete a tweet, it's like you need to be Poirot to find it. He had said his thing on not changing the culture. Fox then basically tweeted it out. And then CM Punk said, "Go suck a blood money covered dick in Saudi Arabia, you fucking dork." Which was a very highly sort of aggressive response.
Inflammatory comment. I mean, a bit of an overreaction, I would say. What do you think, Ken?
Just a bit. I mean, look, I think if Miz had like come for him in some way that was like Miz was really having a crack at him, you know, like it was really like he was goading him or going for him, then I get it then. But it just kind of felt like it was like, you know, sometimes like when you were at school or something, you were at uni and somebody makes a joke, and then unbeknownst to you, the other person's going through all this other stuff, so they just like totally lash out. And it's really unprovoked and kind of unwarranted. That's just kind of what it felt like. He did then delete it, which suggests that he was told that that's maybe not the best response. What did you make of this story?
Yeah, but I believe him. I think he put the tweet up about 1:30 in the morning or something like that. I think it was about 35 minutes later that it disappeared, which leads me to believe that he was told by somebody to delete that tweet on the grounds that it was really quite offensive. I just think it was a total overreaction by CM Punk. I think Miz was just having a little bit of fun with him. Maybe trying to get something going, like Seth Rollins apparently was a month or two ago, well, 6 weeks ago, where maybe Seth and Miz are thinking, if CM Punk does return, then maybe we can set something up here on social media, on Backstage, and that could lead to a big money run, a real high profile run for me later. So I think he was probably just having a bit of fun at his expense. I mean, you know, Punk's been around this game long enough. Certainly Miz has as well. They know the way it's played. They know the game. You know, this is what you do. You know, you say something to get a response. You just don't expect a response like that. I mean, maybe Miz was expecting some kind of response that they could put on the air, and then they could have some, you know, some type of online feud, you know, which gets both of them over without it ever leading to a match or Punk having to return to the ring. Also find the whole thing about, you know, the Saudi thing. I mean, okay, Punk's working for Fox. We all know that. But he's working on a WWE show, a show with the, bearing the WWE initials. He's a part-time WWE analyst. So you can say, oh, yeah, well, he's been paid by Fox, but he's there to comment on WWE. So if he's so against WWE and where it gets its money from and its deals and its associations, why is he working on a show that bears the WWE initials? I think that's the question he needs to answer. Is that a fair question, Kenny?
Yes, I think that's fair. I mean, I've used this example before when the Saudi shows come up, and, you know, inevitably it's the same thing about people saying, you know, if you watch this, you're approving of, you know, murdering journalists and all that. And I kind of laugh and kind of go, well, you know, do you have an iPhone? Because they have sweatshops in China. Like, everything can relate back in a certain way. So I think that for Punk, it's like, if you're going to work for, and I'm not saying this is wrong, if you're going to work for Fox on WWE, then that is kind of you endorsing WWE, which then means that you can't really take the high ground about the Saudi thing. If you, I mean, you can't, there was a way for him to do this. It's, I mean, say the Saudi thing bothers him, right? Which it probably does, because it bothers a lot of people who work there or are around it. But choose the point where you bring it up in a really good way that's going to actually get through, not just in a kind of angry rant that feels like it was really unwarranted. Like, it's not like he, you know, if they were talking about the Saudi show on backstage or something, he said, you know, I don't really agree with WWE going to Saudi Arabia, but, you know, here's what I think about this match. You know, that's his way of being able to say what he thinks, but then doing his job. But this was just like, you, it's like people in glass houses throwing stones. It just doesn't work.
I mean, he just came across as immature. He's like an angry teenager lashing out on social media like he's just discovered it and he can't control his emotions. I mean, I thought it was pathetic. I really did.
He's back next week on, his next appearance on Backstage is a week today, Tuesday the 21st of January. So I guess we'll see what he says. I guess he's only going to be on it like once a month or something, which, I mean, it probably is actually better because you don't want to oversaturate with something like that. But I guess we'll see what he says next week, if anything of interest.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll acknowledge it. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, you know, you're working for Fox, which is in bed with WWE, and WWE is in bed with the Saudis on this deal. So it's all connected. And like, if CM Punk was running an independent podcast that was not associated with WWE and was making money from doing that, or an independent thing that had no connection at all with WWE, then I still would have thought that he overreacted, because he absolutely did. But I mean, he at least would have been independent, not linked with WWE. So for him to write this or tweet this about a fella wrestler, or a, I mean, he's not a wrestler anymore, but a fella person that is now a wrestler, I just thought it was totally uncalled for. And it's like, I mean, this is a guy that's straight edge and doesn't drink, so you can't even blame it on having one too many, right? he can't even blame it on that. So he's stone cold sober when he sent this out.
We've all been there when we've had a couple too many shandies, but yeah, he can't even use that excuse. So
he can't.
Before we talk about other bits and pieces and the testing, I did want to get your thoughts on the first AEW NXT ratings result of the year, where they went head-to-head last week, the January 8th episodes. Obviously, the Dynamite had the Brandi Rhodes segment that was really bad, panned universally everywhere, but it did have the Jericho Moxley segment, which people seemed to like. The NXT show felt fairly average as a show. The AEW came out sixth in the night at 947,000 viewers, and NXT was number 55 with 721,000 viewers. What do you make? What can people make of these results, do you think, or this rating?
I mean, I don't really know what to make of it. I mean, it was a tremendous performance, I think, by AEW for Dynamite, and NXT's right down there, number 55. Still did a decent number. In terms of actual viewership, I think the ranking of the 55, that's on the based on the demographics, isn't it, rather than the actual number of viewers?
Yes.
That the program attracted. So yeah, commanding showing there from AEW. They must be really chuffed themselves, feeling kind of vindicated as well. I mean, obviously they took a real beating after the December 18th episode with the Dark Order segment, and perhaps there was some concern with them. They weren't shown on Christmas Day, but then came back January 1st and then January 8th, and have done really well so far this year. So it's a good sign for them. There's no doubt about it that people are sticking with them. I suppose we shouldn't be that surprised that ratings would fluctuate, but they have done a lot for AEW, haven't they? There's like, 1 week they were down to 600,000 1 week.
Yeah, I think that was their lowest one, was 600 and something. I mean, yeah,
it's quite a difference, really, when quite a disparity there in viewing figures when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, you said something before AEW started, or around the time you said, some people just don't want McMahon wrestling in any form. And I do think that what AEW, and I'll be honest, and this is just for me, I find that whenever I'm, if I'm not watching live, right, and I'm going to be watching the show, I will always watch AEW first. And I think that's because it's a newer thing, and it's something that's kind of, I've watched NXT for years. So it's kind of, I'm used to it. And I think that with AEW, they do seem to have listened to some of the concerns that people have from that December 18th episode where, people were very worried about that show in terms of what they did at the end. But I mean, even when you look at for the rest of January, AEW have kind of built their shows fairly well. This Wednesday or tomorrow, I've just pulled it up here. They've got Moxley versus Sammy Guevara from the Inner Circle, Pac against Darby Allin, Cody Anderson and MJF, the four-way tag match with the winners facing SCU with the Young Bucks' best friends, Santana and Ortiz and Paige and Omega, and the women's tag. And then they've got the Bash at the Beach theme for the next 2 weeks. Then they've got the Cruise episode. They've announced a big trios match for the Cruise. I think it's Santana and Ortiz and Jericho against all of Jurassic Express. So there's a lot of stuff that they've kind of advertised and they're putting out there that seems to be working for them. Whereas with NXT, we're now entering the third year or the fourth year maybe of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. And I'm just curious to ask you this, because the Dusty Rhodes Tag Classic really doesn't do anything for me. And it just, for whatever reason, doesn't excite me as a tournament at all. Do you think that some people are watching AEW over NXT because they've watched NXT for a while and they just want to try something different? Is that maybe part of why AEW is winning over NXT? Because it's not that the show levels are, it's not that AEW is a miles better show than NXT. It's not that NXT is rubbish. It's just that it appears people want something different.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, obviously, when we get to Wednesday, we've already had Raw on that week. So maybe people want wrestling with a different flavor. Of course, everyone knows they can watch NXT on the network, or the WWE fans know they can watch it there. So they don't have to watch it with commercials on the USA network. So it's going to be sat there. They can watch it at the leisure. I mean, I know anyone can do that now with catch up and by recording it and everything, but it's just so convenient to watch it on the network without the ads. So I think there's a lot of factors that influence it. I think you're right about what AEW has been promoting. I think the Moxie storyline has been a minor triumph for the company. I think that's been well done. And they've got some stories that are moving forward there. It did seem for a while there they were just putting matches out without really that much in the way of storyline support. I still feel like I've just got on, just started watching the January 8th episode, so I'm a little bit behind on my Dynamite. So I still think there's a lot of things they could be doing better than they're doing right now. But I do feel like they are getting things right. They're hitting the stride. They're finding a formula. And I think they're gaining in confidence as well, as are the talent. I mean, you've got to remember also, there's a lot of people on there. This is stating the bleeding obvious, but I've started saying it now. There's a lot of people on there who people didn't really know when this whole thing started back on October 2nd. And now viewers do know, who Darby Allin is. They know who Orange Cassidy is. They know who SCU is. They know who all these people are that they previously might not have known or might not have seen for years on TV. Obviously, Christopher Daniels and Kazarian had worked for TNA for a long time. So I think there's that as well. I think there's the talent are getting over with the viewers. So I think that's just a natural progression of a show that's now been around for, was it week 14 last week? I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, week 14. So the fact that the characters are just through, you know, repetition of appearing on TV are getting over and are making headway with the audience and finding a new audience out there. So I think there's a lot of factors that contribute to it. But I mean, we'll see what happens this Wednesday. I think you tweeted something, Kenny, along the lines of, well, this is really good that Dynamite drew like more than 200,000 more viewers than NXT, because that's going to motivate NXT to really come back with something, you know, red hot next week to try and close the gap. So, I mean, we said this, didn't we, again and again and again before Dynamite started, that everyone should be hoping, urging AEW to get this right, should be wishing for this to succeed, because that will have a positive effect on WWE / NXT.
Yeah, 100%. And I was, while you were talking there, I was looking through on the Twitter feeds, and you know, for NXT for tomorrow night, I mean, I know they've got the Dusty Tag Classic. I can't see anything being sort of hyped for tomorrow night's show. And you know, I just read your card there of what was going to be on AEW. They've also actually, now that I remember it, got that 8-man tag involving DDP that they're doing, so they're utilizing him in some way. But I feel like so far it looks like we're probably on course for another AEW win, because they just seem to have a lot more advertised to get people to watch. So I mean, unless you know, tomorrow WWE are doing a big thing where they're saying, you know, this has happened tonight in NXT, AEW feels like it's got 7 things already advertised for you to watch to see what the fallout is going to be. And I think it's a really good point that you made about Raw, because after you've watched Raw, you kind of maybe want to, you know, watch something else for a while. And then maybe by Friday, you're back around. I mean, while we're talking about ratings, the fact that SmackDown is doing the numbers that it's doing, I mean, I think it's just a 2.509 million viewers. Like, how? It is the, I mean, we've for the last few weeks, and I mean, I don't really have a lot to say about this past week's episode either. It's just such a forgettable show. And it's just, but that show does really well. I don't know whether it's because it's on a Friday or whatever, but, you know, that show just, it seems to do really well. But NXT, I don't know, it's in this weird spot where they've got to compete with this new thing. And, you know, AEW, the only thing they've got to concentrate on is Dynamite. So, of course, they're going to be, everything's going to be on that.
Absolutely. You did just ask me there, Kenny, about the Dusty Tag Team Classic. You're right, it doesn't feel special. I think it did feel special when Cody and Dustin were still there. I mean, when they were there and presenting, I think they had both of them there presenting
the Finn Balor and Samoa Joe, the initial winners.
Yeah, presenting the trophies to the winners. And it really had a sense of significance. You know, it was a real, you know, something of substance I felt when they were involved, because it's like they were endorsing the winners as well. And you are right. Why does this still exist? You know, now that Cody and Dustin are working for AEW, I mean, you know, it's a respect thing, I guess, to keep Dusty's name alive. But I mean, you know, Dusty's this legendary guy whose name's never going to die in pro wrestling. We're always going to be making references to him. I mean, maybe it's just an honor thing. You know, we want to honor what Dusty brought to this business, so let's run this annually. So, in which case, you know, you can only applaud WWE for doing that. But I'm with you. The tournament doesn't really seem to matter that much. It doesn't seem to be something that you absolutely have to see.
So, I mean, up next, let's move on to the Impact stuff. It's a kind of twofold conversation, because we've got Tessa Blanchard versus Sami Callihan for the Impact World title. I've not had a chance to watch it yet. I am going to watch it. So by the time we record the overrun, if I've got anything, you know, else to bring to the conversation, I'll try. But she gets the big win. She wins the title from Sami Callihan at the pay-per-view. But the day before, she had tweeted out her sort of, you know, saying, women, let's support each other. And this sort of influx of sort of accusations about her came out the woodwork from Allison Kay, Chelsea Green, Isla Dawn, various women saying that she was a bully, she used the N-word, a lot of accusations about spitting on somebody's face. And this all came out kind of the day before she's due to have this big match at Hard to Kill. She was pulled from the press events beforehand and after. She's not mentioned it directly. She's mentioned it indirectly by kind of saying, you know, nobody's perfect, but, you know, I'm your world champion and da da da. Impact were kind of between a rock and a hard place. You know, they either were going to have to pull the trigger on this thing they've spent 6 months on, or, you know, take a moral high ground that is really going to wreck what they've got going on. So it's a lot to unpack, but
I mean, it was a lot like Priscilla Kelly, Casey Michael, I think Rebel weighed in. Remember Rebel? She tweeted, I like to think regarding Tessa, I like to think people change over time, but I can confirm the bad behavior and non-supportive attitude in Japan. I was there. This was in reference to, Priscilla Kelly. Yeah, here we go. Yeah. Priscilla Kelly said in response to Tessa, remember publicly putting me down on Twitter last year for something that didn't involve you whatsoever, then continuing to drag my name to other people for it. And she's just suggested to Tessa, you should probably delete this tweet. There was a lot of people who came out and really nailed her for it. You know, Shanna said she did more nasty stuff in Japan. Never forget. Practice what you preach, sweetheart. I stand by. She's a fun-loving person who would never disrespect anyone. Much love to you, Rosa, which is one of the person that Tessa was accused of, I think, spitting in the face. I think it was. It's a really bad situation. I mean, she hasn't really denied it, has she? She hasn't come out and said, oh, this is false. And when you've got this many people independently saying these things or tweeting these things, it's hard to discount it, wouldn't you say, Kenny? It does seem to carry a lot of weight, all these accusations.
Yeah.
As you say, yeah, Impact, do they pull the trigger on Tessa, make a champion at Hard to Kill after this six-month build-up? Or do they punish her in light of these accusations? I'm sure Impact was thinking, why have these people suddenly decided to disclose this now? It's like it's been done, the time of it's like been done, you know.
She did kind of bring this on herself because she decided on the day before this big thing to, I'm trying to see if I've got the exact tweet. She basically put a tweet out saying all women should support each other.
Tess wrote, hey women, try supporting one another, cool things happen. So yeah, you're right, all these comments were in response to her writing that, absolutely. But it wouldn't surprise me if Impact thought, and this was partly the reason why Impact decided to stand behind, support Tessa in this situation and stick to its plan and implement her, you know, victory over Sami Callihan for the Impact world title. Wouldn't surprise me if Impact saw this as a way to really sabotage the show. The fact that this information came out right before the pay-per-view. All this obviously happened a long time ago. I mean, not a long time ago, as in 10 or 15 years ago, but a period of months ago, or maybe even years. This wasn't something that had happened last week. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was the reasons why Impact Wrestling didn't change its plans. What can you say? I mean, you can't defend any of these things that she's accused of doing. I mean, I think some people came out, like Moose, for instance. He tweeted, I guess you and Chelsea Green, oh, this was to Alison Kay. I guess you and Chelsea Green are absolute angels with a clean past. The timing of these tweets from you guys shows a lot about your characters. So Moose came out and supported Tessa there. I think Tommy Dreamer has made some comments, I think, since Hard to Kill, in which he stated that the locker room was fully supportive, or most of the locker room was supportive of Tessa, and the company was as well. I don't know. I mean, what'd you say? I mean, I can believe that these things happened. I don't, you know, I'm not dismissing any of these accusations. I can believe that these things did happen, and she shouldn't have done that. Absolutely, she shouldn't have done that. Impact's taken the decision to support her and make her champion. We'll see if this lingers, Kenny, or whether it sort of blows over. It looks really bad on Tessa. And you can say it looks bad on Impact as well, and it does. If this were to happen in WWE, I bet WWE would have taken a different response. I think they would have, I think they would have probably changed their plans had all this information surfaced just before one of WWE's stars was about to win a title. I think WWE would react to this very differently to the way that Impact has. Maybe Impact thinks it's got nothing to lose, and the truth is it probably hasn't got anything to lose because, you know, it's not exactly big time, as we know. I mean, I'm a fan of the company, but I mean, it's you know, it's underneath most people's radar screens, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's the thing is, I mean, I was reading some stuff yesterday about Impact apparently kind of knew that she had some issues, and that was one of the reasons that she'd not been offered a WWE developmental deal, was because they knew she had some attitude issues.
Yeah.
I mean, she is, I don't want to say that her age, I don't want to say that her age makes what she's done okay, but she is only 23. And like, I know people who at 23 were absolute knobs. And now, you know, when they're in their 30s, they're a lot more grown up and they're a lot better. I think the Impact kind of had to do what they did in kind of still putting the belt on her. But
I mean, what was the alternative? I mean, they don't have a lot of talent because, you know, the roster's thin because the budget's very small. So I can understand why they did what they did. I absolutely do understand why they did what they did. But I don't think WWE would have done that. Do you think WWE would have reacted differently, Kenny?
Yeah, I think they would have. Well, because they are a lot bigger, but I think that they, to them, looking like you're rewarding, even if that's not what it is, but looking like you're rewarding that behaviour doesn't come across very well, and they would be dragged over hot coals for this if they had put the belt on someone. But the thing that's so sad about it is that Impact had done this really kind of original, revolutionary story where they were, the woman was going to win the men's title, she was going to be part of the lineage of the world title, and when that happened, when that came out on Saturday, it just kind of, it was like, no matter what happened on Sunday, that kind of ruined it for a lot of people. It ruined it for me, in the sense of like, I'll still go in and watch the match, probably enjoy it, but like, I would have been rooting for Tessa a lot before it, whereas like, I know Isla Dawn. I know her as a person. She's one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. She's not putting that tweet out about Tessa unless something happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is. And but then, you know, Sandra brought up a point when we were talking about it a little bit on Patreon, on the Overrun, where she said, you know, there's a lot of men in wrestling who are not maybe great people or have done a lot worse than this. And, you know, the idea that, you know, not everybody's going to be an angel or a saint. But I think the reason that this came was a problem is because it came up the day before she was going to win the belt. You know, that's the problem. It was the timing of it that was really bad. I hope that she has grown as a person, and you know, I hope that she does privately reach out to the women and sort of explain, you know, just apologize, just say sorry.
Yeah.
I've never spat in someone's face. If I did, I think I would be, I would want to make amends on that one, personally.
Yeah, I think she should do that as well. Yeah, definitely does need, privately as well. You know, she needs to atone for this, and it's going to take a long time to do it. But I mean, and some people may never, you know, accept her apologies, and you know, that's up to them. That's their choice, and that's their right to do so. That's their prerogative. But I think Tessa, now she's champ. I'm sure this has been a real. I think Tommy Dreamer stated in that interview that, you know, Tessa was in a really bad place before the match. She was aware of the timing of this. She was. I'm sure she was remorseful over what she'd done. I'm sure she was remorseful that Impact Wrestling had received all this bad publicity as a result of her prior actions in other companies. And yeah, just hope over time she can find a way, yeah, to make amends with these people and really atone for these things that she's done that I'm sure she now recognises that she shouldn't have done. So obviously lots of male wrestlers have done things that I'm sure they regret as well. I think the thing is, because she's young, I think a lot of people think that people now have got different attitudes. It's not like she's in her 50s or her 60s or her 70s. You know, and you go back decades where a lot of language that was used was obviously totally unacceptable now. But in the business, in the old days, well, that was the way people spoke. Now people don't expect these type of words or language or actions to take place because absolutely they're totally unacceptable and should never happen. So I think that's what shocked people. It's a woman and she's still really young and she can't use the excuse of, oh, well, that's the way things were in the old days, because she didn't, you know, she's not a product of the old days. She's current, she's young, and she should be playing by the rules that we all try and adhere to now.
What about the match? How was the match? It's getting a lot of good feedback. How was it as a culmination of the story?
Yeah, I thought it was very well done. I thought Tessa sold really well in the match. The crowd did boo her. Some members of the crowd did boo her at the start of the match. I mean, this is a very small audience. So, you know, I don't know whether this is indicative of the audience as a whole. If she'd been in a larger arena, maybe she would have received more flack from the audience. But as the match wore on, she was certainly viewed as the babyface. That could have been partly because Sami Callihan is such an effective heel, such a brilliant heel. I mean, a guy who does not receive anywhere near enough credit for his heel work. I mean, Sami is tremendous. He's fantastic in this match. He did everything he could to get himself over as a heel and Tessa over as a babyface. And really, by the halfway point, everyone in the arena was behind Tessa. I thought she did a sterling job in the match. I would absolutely recommend, you know, anyone watch this. Kind of an old school match, like a story match with a lot of emphasis just really on selling pain and really trying to get over the emotional aspect rather than, you know, overstuffing it, you know, overloading on high spots. You know, and it looking like something from the World Tumbling and Trampolining Championships, which a lot of matches do these days. I thought it was a lot different to that. Really well done. And obviously we are where we are now. So we went into this match knowing these revelations on January 11th. So that did slightly tarnish it. There's no doubt about it. But I still thought it was a really good presentation, really good performances. Thought it was very well done by Impact. Thought the commentary was tremendous. So I would absolutely recommend the match.
Yeah, I'm going to try and watch it before we record the overrun later on in the week. So there you go. So, I mean, in terms of SmackDown, I just thought the show was so forgettable. I mean, have you ever watched a wrestling show where you kind of start to get annoyed that you're spending time watching it?
Like, yeah, many times.
Oh, God. Like, it just, I felt like it was everything that was on it was missable. Every single thing that was on it was missable. And I was watching it in Blackpool when I was in the hotel, and I was just like, I mean, yeah. So, but was there anything from the SmackDown show last week that you enjoyed and you thought stood out? Is there anything on that brand that's exciting you right now?
Well, we had a slight pivot, didn't we, in the Miz storyline, where he came out and played babyface and was saying, I was having a bad day last week when I attacked Kofi, you know, and said his emotions had got the better of him. You know, he said, I'm sorry, you know, and then Miz reminded us that the Fiend had threatened his daughter. You know, then Miz segued into, there was one bright spot, the return of John Morrison. He came out, welcome back chance for John Morrison. Although initially not much of a response to John Morrison. It seemed like they really had to milk it to get the crowd going. Did you notice that, Kenny?
I did. I think part of it is because he has such a horrific entrance theme that has been, that he still has now. Like, it's, I've always, but Morrison is this weird guy, but he's a very good wrestler, but like, when did he get the gimmick of John Morrison? Was it 2006? 2007?
Maybe 2007. Eminem came in 2005, I believe it was. And then I think it was the following year, there was the big bust up with Joey Mercury. I think he was removed. I think he's lost his job. And then there was all sorts of problems with Melina. And I think her and John Morrison were, well, actually at that point, it was Johnny, was he Johnny Nitro at that point? He was, wasn't he? Johnny Nitro at that point, wasn't
he? Yeah, because it was Mercury, Nitro and Melina.
That's right, yeah. So it was Johnny Nitro then. I think it was 2007, yeah. I think so.
So the idea is that he came in 2007, he became John Morrison, with the idea that he looks like Jim Morrison, it's a 70s thing. But, like, he in no way embodies that character in any way, and never has. So he's just this guy who is a very good pro wrestler, can do really amazing athletic things, has had great matches in WWE and Impact and Lucha Underground, all these different places. But, like, the gimmick is just so not, it doesn't fit very well. So when he came back, it's not that surprising that 10 years later, people are still a bit like, well, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he had all these nicknames for himself, and you were just trying to work out, well, where the hell did that come from? And we should say that presumably this is based on Jim Morrison, who was the lead singer of The Doors, of course. And but you're right. What's really the connection there between John Morrison or John Hennigan and Jim Morrison from The Doors? I guess there was a slight resemblance there. I guess that was enough for WWE. One thing that also struck me as odd was when he came out, and on the graphic, it read, John Morrison walked out, on the graphic it read, winner of WWE Tough Enough in 2003. I mean, I thought that really aged him. I mean, we're now in 2020.
Because he looks great. You would never know that he was a wrestler in 2003. You would think he's a lot younger. So, yeah, they just, like, aged him by so much.
Yeah, I mean, he could pass for, I'd say, 32, 33. Certainly pass for younger than you, Kenny.
I knew the dig was going to come. I could feel the breeze of a dig coming at me there. I knew that was where that was going. Okay,
I apologise. You know, it was unnecessary. It was uncalled for. But yeah, he came out and Miz said that, you know, he'd formed the greatest tag team of the 21st century with Morrison. And Morrison had said that he was disappointed in the audience. So, I mean, that was quite interested in as well, where Miz had kind of played babyface, but then Morrison came out and he was playing sort of subtle heel there, saying, you know, this is a guy, the Miz, he's worked really hard, hasn't had anything handed to him, which is all true. You know, he's been there 15 years, worked harder than anyone. And that was quite interesting there, where Morrison was kind of playing subtle heel. And then Kofi and Big E came out and they refused to accept Miz's apology. That then led us to a Kingston versus The Miz match, which The Miz won with a skull-crushing finale after a fracas at ringside between Morrison and Big E.
What did you make of Morrison and Big E on commentary?
I didn't think they were bad. I mean, I think Morrison's done this before. I think he does have quite a sharp wit. He's obviously, you know, in a sense, you're kind of, you know, you're on a short leash, aren't you, when you're on commentary in WWE. It's not like being on the Power Slam podcast where you can say anything. You know, you're on a bit of a, you know, you're not wearing a muzzle, but it's not far off. So I thought he did pretty well there. I thought Big E, had Big E on the ropes a couple of times when they're at the desk. He's a guy who's reliable. You can put him in that position and he's not going to screw it up. I thought this was the best part of SmackDown because it was something a little different and it was, you know, good to see The Miz get a win over Kingston. And it feels like The Miz is going somewhere again. And I don't really object to the reformation of The Miz and Morrison tag team because I think they can do something as a team. And I think they can have some interesting, you know, they can have matches with, like, the Usos. They can have matches with, obviously, Kofi and Big E. I mean, there's a lot of things they can do there. And I think they can get a good 6 months out of this before the inevitable breakup. What do you think to a Morrison-Miz partnership? Are you looking forward to it?
I think when it gets going, it's going to be good. I think this was, like, the beginning stages of it. I think that Miz and Morrison as a team will be good. I did laugh when some people were like, oh, this is the worst use of a John Morrison return. It wasn't the most exciting return in the world, but it actually did make a lot of sense because they were together before. They're former partners. They did the dirt sheet together. They were tag champions together. You know, so they've got a long history together. So in some ways, I actually prefer him being put with Miz rather than, you know, let's get him the Rumble pop for, you know, a return or something, because they've went with something a little bit different. So I appreciate that. And I think that the New Day versus Morrison and Miz as a tag team feud could be pretty good. And I actually maybe think that Morrison and Miz as a team is maybe the way to go long term, because Morrison as a singles probably isn't going to go that far. Miz always is better when he's got when he's working with somebody. I mean, yeah. Miz made Shane McMahon a likable babyface tag team champion. That's impressive to do. So I think it's going to be good for Miz. And, you know, we've slated Miz a little bit recently, given, you know, that dreadful TLC match and stuff. So yeah, good for Miz at least. That's the one thing I'll say.
Yeah, definitely. What else was on the show? Mandy Rose, you know, made Otis a cake, which read on the front of it, "I'm sorry." I mean, she presented it to Otis, who nearly spontaneously combusted. I mean, Mandy, I mean, do you think she has time to make cakes? I mean, her appearance looks like a full-time job to me, Kenny. I mean, it doesn't just happen, does it?
It doesn't look like she's eating any cakes, for sure. Like, she's in great shape. You know, the Otis and Mandy thing, I think on paper, like, I get what they're going for. I just don't think it's particularly clicking on screen. And, you know,
it's simply not believable. I mean, it's marginally better than Balls Mahoney and Kelly Kelly, isn't it? Marginally.
You know? I'd say my favourite thing on the show, though, because I thought it was a very clever wrinkle to the story, was when they had basically the Ramblin' Rabbit doll was going to give away, you know, a secret to Daniel Bryan about the Fiend, a way to defeat the Fiend, and then, you know, Wyatt obviously, you know, kills the Ramblin' Rabbit puppet. I thought it was very clever, and it was a good way to kind of show that, well, that's maybe how you see the weakness of the Fiend. So that, for me, out of the whole show, that would be the one I would recommend people watch, because I think it was just really good, kind of fairly subtle storytelling involving the Fiend, which made me more intrigued to see how they're going to get to the Royal Rumble and how it's going to affect the Fiend, if Daniel Bryan's going to have anything over him by that point. I thought that stuff was pretty good.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, Daniel Bryan's doing an interview backstage, and then Ramblin' Rabbit appears on the big screen, and he's about to reveal how Bryan can defeat the Fiend. He knows a secret, and then this hand, which reads "hurt" on it, grabs Ramblin' Rabbit, and Bray Wyatt said the mortal words, "Snitches get stitches." And then later on in the locker room, Daniel Bryan found Ramblin' Rabbit's carcass in a gift box. So Ramblin' Rabbit is no more, at least until the next episode of the Firefly Funhouse, because these characters always come back.
Yeah, the Ramblin' Rabbit at this point is like Terry Funk. Like, I don't know.
Exactly.
Or Big Show Turns or something. But yeah, that's pretty much all I was thinking for SmackDown. Should we move on to Raw?
Yeah, that's pretty much... I mean, I guess we could just mention the main event was Usos versus King Corbin and Dolph Ziggler.
The return of Robert Roode. Were you excited, Finn?
Well, not really, but I mean, who was?
Can I just ask you a question? So Robert Roode was suspended for a wellness violation.
Yes.
Now, to me, when I saw him, I was like, he looked like he was still violating the wellness policy when he was back. Like, he just looks in, like, insane shape for a guy in his 40s. Like, he just... it's unreal.
Well, I mean, we don't know. We don't know what he failed that wellness policy for, do we, Kenny? I mean...
Maybe he just had some cannabis or something. Maybe it was something more, you know... Maybe he was in California, where cannabis is legal, and he smoked a bit of weed. Maybe that's what it was.
Probably a tainted supplement. That's probably what it was.
Yeah.
That's the excuse they always use, isn't it? The tainted supplement. But you're right. He returned and you're like, well, yeah, he doesn't really look any different. But what surprised me was how much emphasis was placed on Roode. Because usually, I mean, it's a long time. I think it was it Robert Roode and was it Primo? It was one of, was it Primo?
It was two Primo, of yeah.
Two, and people were like, wow, he's still under contract. It's amazing, you know. So Primo, Robert Roode were suspended on the same day or for wellness policy violations. What surprised me was that they actually still have a wellness policy. Because it's so long since anyone had been suspended. And then Roode returns, and instead of being, you know, dialed down, you know, de-emphasized, he's there pushed as basically the star of the main event segment. Obviously, this will lead to a six-man, I would think, on next week's SmackDown with the Usos and Roman Reigns, who was out there, versus King Corbin, Dolph Ziggler, and Robert Roode. So I imagine we can expect a six-man next week. But yeah, huge emphasis on Roode right after his return from a drug suspension. So that was the thing that surprised me the most about this.
And we're actually getting Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin at the Royal Rumble. God, they know how to heat Roman Reigns up, don't they? Jesus.
My God. I mean, it's like, who needs to see that match again? You know.
At this rate, Finn, during the Royal Rumble, you'll be asking me to pull out the Jägermeisters to get through that match.
I don't think so. I think I'd rather go out on the street and do star jumps.
Sure. I mean, that's how you'd feel after a Jäger bomb, though. Anyway, so let's move on to Raw. I thought Raw actually had far more that I was interested in or excited about than SmackDown did. We had the opening triple threat match with Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and Drew McIntyre. I thought it was a pretty hot match. Really happy to see Drew get the win. I thought they booked it really well. Orton was having fun. AJ played a decent heel. So I was a big fan of the opening segment. What did you make to it?
Yeah, I thought it was well done. I mean, Randy Orton was out there. I mean, he was looked like he was having trouble keeping a straight face when AJ Styles came out and raged about, you know, being duped by Orton. Styles said that he genuinely thought that Orton was injured, you know, and how could he do this to him? And then Styles started bragging about the quality of his RKO. And yeah, there was some fun there, and I think it's all good natured. You know, they're poking fun at AJ Styles. He's sending himself up. But I think they're all having a laugh with this. I don't think it's mean-spirited, which, you know, is nice to see in WWE. Yeah, Drew McIntyre came out. Still felt like he was a babyface. Feels like that's moving forward. Really good to see in the match that Randy Orton used AJ's Styles clash, which Styles kicked out of. So that was a nice little reversal there from a nice little sort of payback there for Styles using the RKO the previous week. So I enjoyed seeing that. It came down to Styles and Orton. McIntyre's at ringside, and then Orton leveled Styles with the RKO, and then McIntyre suddenly appears from out of nowhere in the corner, runs over, nails Orton with the Claymore, pin Styles for the 1-2-3. So yeah, it's the big momentum builder for McIntyre. It does feel like they're sending the message towards the viewer that McIntyre is the one to watch in the Royal Rumble. It definitely feels that way to me. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, he feels like he's a player right now. They're getting behind him, and I would love to see him and Brock at WrestleMania. I don't know if that's what we're going to see, but I think that if there's no better time to give it a shot.
Well, I mean, there's been some ugly rumours, Kenny.
Oh, don't.
A certain boxer with the initials TF may well be the one who's been lined up to face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. You've heard those as well. I know you have because you commented on it on Twitter.
It's just heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking.
I mean, you hope that it's one of those false stories. You know, you hope it's one of those dead cats, don't you? You know, to distract us from what's really going on. I hope so.
Yeah, I just, nobody needs to see that. Anyway, we also on the show got, I will say, I continue to hate the Viking, the War Raiders, what are they called again? Viking Raiders, War Raiders?
Raiders, yeah. I mean, open challenge. I mean, I mean, just you might as well just say creative has nothing for us. I mean, what occurred to me here, right, was we had the Viking Raiders come out for this open challenge. I mean, there was like three people in the audience who responded to them. And then the Bollywood boys came out. Of course, the Raiders squashed them. Now, when the creative team has no interest in the tag team champions and can't be bothered to come up with any adequate storylines for them, you know a tag team division is in trouble. You know, we've got the tag team champions. Creative team doesn't care, but they care about everyone, every other team, so much less that they're leaving the belts on the Viking Raiders. I mean, we have been here before. I'm not trying to say this is a new low because things have been worse, but this is a bad situation to be in. And if I was the Viking Raiders, I would be a little bit concerned.
Yeah, and, you know, their promo style doesn't really work. One of the kind of funnest parts of Raw, I thought, actually, was Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman coming out to speak to the crowd. Paul Heyman is, you know, making fun of Kentucky, the state that they're in. The fans chant, "You suck," so Heyman and Lesnar leave. Then they're going to come back. "Ladies and gentlemen, my client does not suck," Heyman says. And it goes on. He talks about the Royal Rumble. It talks about how, you know, it's not a prediction, it's a spoiler. Lesnar's going to win. Then brings up, you know, the streak of his spoilers being true. Then veers that into the Undertaker's streak and how Lesnar was the one that ended it. And then we got R-Truth, who came out, who basically wanted to insert himself into the Royal Rumble because his motto, like his childhood hero John Cena, was to never give up, and he wanted in the ring to toss over that big, big man, Paul Heyman. And Lesnar's laughing. Heyman says, "Look here, bong hit." And then basically R-Truth like undeclares himself. Then R-Truth asks, says he doesn't want to go to Sioux Falls City. Heyman's screaming Suplex City. He asks Brock what's up. He dances. Brock kicks the shit out of him and then gets a microphone, and rare Brock verbiage says, "That's what's up," and leaves. I mean, this was just a ton of fun.
Yeah. Heyman said, "My spoilers will tell you the future, and my spoilers shall set you free, because only the truth flows from my mouth." You know, that in itself was hilarious, wasn't it, Paul Heyman? Paul Heyman saying that. And then R-Truth came out, yeah, as you say, he did his comedy routine. Brock Lesnar looked like he was having a laugh, because he's thinking, yeah, they're paying me all this money for doing this. You know, I mean, of course he's having a good time. And R-Truth is there just, you know, doing his act. And as you say, yeah, Brock Lesnar then clotheslines him, hits him with the F5. Lesnar and Heyman leave. And then poor R-Truth's been helped up the ramp, and Mojo Rawley comes out. And in a big moment for him, attacks R-Truth, pins him for the 24/7 title. So Mojo is back on, well, not back on top, but back on maybe the second rung of the ladder. You know, it's the sky's the limit for Mojo, Kenny.
I think the second rung of the ladder is even too high for Mojo Rawley. Like, oh, Mojo Rawley, man. Yeah. Send them away.
Then we had Lashley and Lana. They arrived backstage. We have this is what Lana said to Charlie. Who was Charlie in Blackpool, by the way, Kenny? I don't think she was she?
She wasn't. I was actually going to take a photo of I was going to take a photo of myself at the famous area on the high street where she did that interview. I think it was Ollie. I said, I was like, oh no, I was actually talking to somebody from WWE. And I said, you know, Charlie's on Raw, and she's just kind of, you know, your average backstage announcer, but she will have years of cred from everyone at Inside the Ropes for those interviews up Blackpool Tower on the high street. If anybody has ever turned chicken shit into chicken salad, Charlie Caruso.
You know what? If we ever launch an Inside the Ropes announcer or commentator or mic holder, interviewer, Hall of Fame, she'll be the first one in it, won't she, Kenny, after that?
Yeah. The move over, Mean Gene. Charlie Caruso's here.
That's it. So, I mean, Lana's there backstage, and she said, "We have accepted the fact that everyone, including you," to Charlie, "are envious and jealous of our success and our love. This then led to Bobby Lashley versus Rusev in the big match. The big match after the wedding angle. And it was a big disappointment. That match, what a flop.
My favorite tweet, actually, about the match came from Brian Alvarez. And I want to read it out to you. So Brian Alvarez said, imagine someone ruining your wedding and humiliating you and your new bride, and you finally get your hands on them and you start doing leapfrogs. Like, what? It's like that, you know, the match that everybody always mentions, the Triple H and Orton WrestleMania 25 match, where Orton was like DDT and Stephanie, and like Triple H is handcuffed to the ropes and he like kisses Stephanie in front of him and he kicks Vince in the head, and then they just have, it breaks into his, then Triple H breaks into his house, and then they just have a bog standard technical wrestling match.
Yeah, that lasts far too long. As is usual for a Triple H match at WrestleMania.
How long was that match? 4 hours and 33 minutes, something like that?
Oh, it just went on and on, didn't it? It just never ended. Absolutely never ended. But yeah, we've got to say, that whole storyline did give us one of the most ridiculous angles ever, the home invasion, with Randy Orton sitting there with the model, who wasn't much of an actress, and all these fight scenes with cameras set up in all these places, all these random people running around. I mean, none of this was ever explained. I mean, if you're ever in a position to ask Triple H a question about something, Kenny, maybe you need to ask him about that angle. You know, let's just see what sense of humor he has when it comes to discussing, you know, epic fails in his past. But yeah, Lashley and Rusev should have been like major retribution going on here. And it just felt just underwhelming. It was just rather average. And there wasn't, you know, it wasn't a babyface versus babyface match. But there didn't really seem like there was a huge issue at stake here. Match lasted too long. I mean, it wasn't a great crowd, I've got to say. I mean, the audience did react really well to Heyman and Lesnar. I mean, they did a really good job working the crowd, of course. But I felt like the crowd was fairly quiet for most of the night. There was a muted response to quite a lot of the content on Raw. Had the audience been more into it, I think it would have been viewed differently. But I mean, the big high spot was Liv Morgan coming out to confront Lana, who's wearing these huge heels. And she just gets a drink, throws it in Liv's face, then hurls her into the barrier. Rusev is brainlessly distracted by this and then pinned with a single spear by Lashley. So, I mean, the whole layout, the finish, the reaction, you know, there just wasn't that, you know, it didn't feel like there was this vendetta or there's this score to settle here. It just felt like a desperately, painfully mediocre match. And then afterwards, we find out, Lana's pissed off because Morgan came out and tried to intimidate her. And she issued a challenge for a mixed match on next week's Raw, which Lashley wasn't happy about because he was, you know, he'd scored the win over Rusev. He thought, that's it, we've drawn a line under this. I think most of us were hoping, yes, that's a line drawn under it, we can now move on. But no, Kenny. The feud must continue.
It must continue. We did learn one thing. we did learn one thing on Raw, and that is that don't ever come on Rusev's face. That's what he said in the post-match promo. Never come on. You never come on my face. You're like, great. Sure. Okay. I do want to give a couple of compliments, although I agree with what you say about the layout and everything. Everything that you said is totally valid, but I do want to give big props to Liv Morgan for the bump that she took onto the apron. She executed it so well. You know, Lana chucks it and she just like bashes off that barrier. And
threw him into the barrier. Yeah, it was a hell of a bump. Yeah,
hell of a bump. And then Lana did pop me when she was backstage and she was like, you know, you can't come out there and intimidate me. I'm a celebrity. And I did laugh. So.
And she referred to herself also as a supermodel and a fashionista.
I mean,
who does she think she is? Meghan Markle?
I mean, I think she definitely thinks she's a princess, put it that way. But yeah, so we're going to get the mixed tag next week. Who could possibly care? I actually liked the contract signing with Becky Lynch and Asuka, where Asuka ended up spraying mist in Becky's face, and Becky got a promo talking about how she's the toughest woman she's ever faced, and you know she's going to get out of the Royal Rumble. And then I think there was actually somebody who had translated what Asuka said to Becky Lynch, and she said, "You really think you can beat me? Then come on, let's do it. Let's go. Idiot, idiot, idiot. Shut up, Jerry." And then she signed the contract. And then when after she'd sprayed the mist and she got the mic again, she then said, "You really don't get it. No one understands. I will beat you. I will, I will, I will." I thought it was really strong.
Well, I would disagree with you, Kenny. I thought I thought it was weak. We got Asuka and Becky Lynch there. They did the sign-in. Becky's still in a funk. You know, she can't kick this, you know, this mood. She's in this low mood at the moment. Then she says to Asuka, "May the best woman win." And then just stood there as Asuka blew green mist in her face. How could she not have anticipated an ambush? I mean, I knew that was going to happen. The problem was the replay, which they showed in slow motion, the quality of the camera work was far too good. So when Asuka started blowing the mist, and she didn't really have enough either, Becky's eyes were closed before the mist left Asuka's mouth. So it obviously didn't go into her eyes. I have no idea why they showed that. I thought Lynch really overreacted at ringside to the mist. I thought the promo was mostly incomprehensible. You know, all I got from it was she said she was going to go down swinging and she was going to take Asuka with her. I mean, this match needs to deliver because I just think the hype for it has been... I just think it's been limp. That's what I think it's been. So, I think what we need is a big brawl between them next week. And I think we will get that because it kind of seemed to me like maybe Becky needed to try and attack Asuka at some point during this segment. And I think we'll get that next week. So I imagine I will be, I will hold a different opinion when we get to the go home week or the go home show. At least I hope I do, because it just hasn't done it for me at all. This, I just for a match. I mean, you look at that Royal Rumble undercard, and it's not very exciting. As you said earlier, we've got King Corbin versus Roman Reigns. We've got Becky Lynch versus Asuka, which I don't think's been promoted very well. What else have we got on the undercard?
We've got Wyatt and Bryan.
Wyatt and Bryan, yeah, well, okay, that's a pretty good match. You know, that there, but I feel like we need more from the hype for these two as well.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think Becky and Asuka has been built fairly well. I like that Becky, in the way that she's behaving, is putting Asuka over as more of a threat, really, than WWE has. In any way, in a long time, which I like. And I think that those two matches, the Becky and Asuka and Bryan and Wyatt, are good. But for the rest of the show, I am with you. Roman and Corbin, I don't think anybody's really interested. I think they're going to probably go with Lacey Evans and Bayley, and I just don't really have any interest in that. And I don't know what else they're going to put on the undercard. I mean, maybe we'll get something out of the fallout from the main event. Maybe we're going to get Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins or something, but... how many more matches do you think they're going to have? They've got the two Rumbles.
I think there'll be some sort of tag team, probably another open challenge on the kickoff with the Viking Raiders. There'll be something with the tag teams, you would have thought. But it doesn't feel like, you know, it's got that much sort of, you know, zing or that much sort of life, this undercard. And I really feel like they could have done so much more than they've done. And okay, we've still got two episodes of SmackDown, so there is more they can do with Bryan and Wyatt, but we've only got one episode of Raw. I think they really need to crank it up next week in terms of making these matches seem more appealing than they are. Hopefully, you know, Lynch is going to come back swinging next Monday. I would like to see a big pull-apart brawl with all the other women wrestlers coming out to separate them, and maybe something coming from that as well. I would imagine that is how it will play out. Because, I mean, they haven't really... Another thing about Rumble, they haven't really promoted the women's Royal Rumble match. And we've got Charlotte. She's been pushed as the favourite. but they haven't done that much more really to promote that match. I mean, am I being too harsh there? I don't feel like I am.
No, no, I don't think they've done a lot to build that. I mean, the hope is that, you know, at the Rumble they're going to create stuff out of that show that is going to make you want to get invested in WrestleMania season. That's the hope.
Yeah. Well, it is, yeah. But I mean, since Royal Rumble is the number two show of the year, I feel like they should have done more to promote it than they have. And I think they've fallen into the, you know, that old trap of just thinking, well, Rumble's a big show, kind of sells itself. And I feel like that's very much the attitude in WWE right now, is that, well, we don't really need to try because we know people will be into the Royal Rumble matches. And the truth is that people will be. And in a sense, WWE is right.
And then the main event of the show, we had Aleister Black versus Buddy Murphy in a very good match where Aleister Black ended up getting the win, which kind of played into the main event because we had Buddy Murphy basically stayed on the outside through the next match, which was Eric Rowan winning a squash. And then in the main event, which was the fist fight with Seth Rollins and AOP against Joe Owens and Big Show, Murphy would end up coming into the ring and low blowing the Big Show and getting involved in the match and basically joining the group and helping them get the win over the babyfaces. What did you make of the Black and Murphy rematch and the decision to put Murphy with AOP and Seth?
I mean, I enjoyed the rematch. I mean, this was Murphy's third TV loss to Aleister Black, wasn't it? He lost at the TLC event and been two TV losses. So in a sense, I like it, because it gives Murphy something to do, and I think he's a real talent. And it draws a line under the Murphy versus Black feud, which to me felt like it had peaked before this match. The only argument I would have is that, hold on a minute, you've just told us that Buddy Murphy can't beat Aleister Black. He's had three attempts and lost each time. Aleister Black's like a mid-card guy. So he's lost to Black three times, but now he's part of Seth Rollins's main event crew. So I didn't think that was I know that's a typical WWE way of doing things, in that this big story development then rights the previous wrongs or wipes the slate clean and it's a new start, you know, fresh coat of paint and everything. But this was all in the same sort of, well, it wasn't in the same segment because you say we had a match in between, but it's all connected emotionally. We're thinking, you know, Murphy's at ringside, you know, he's distraught because he's lost again, doesn't know what to do with himself, then enters the ring during the six-man fist fight, hits Shaw with a low blow, joins Rollins, and then AOP and Seth Rollins, they get the win because the referee rules that Big Show is unable to continue. This is after Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens have been wiped out on the stage. They've been smashed through the announcer's table. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. But, I mean, it's not like Murphy is this, you know, this killer, you know, this unstoppable force, Kenny, who's just joined this main event crew. He's a three-time loser. You know, maybe this will be a good thing in the long run. But it just didn't really feel like, you know, Rollins is not exactly bursting with charisma. The AOP, I thought at one point, did have quite a lot of presence, but I'm not feeling it on Raw at all. And Buddy Murphy is a real talent, really good in the ring, but he's not really bursting with personality either. So we've got this main event crew that to me is kind of personality deficient. So if they're going to, I don't know whether they're going to recruit anyone new now or this is it and it's a quartet. But it's not, you know, it's not the Four Horsemen. It's not the NWO in the charisma department. I mean, you know, you watch the match. It felt to me like this is the end of the Big Show's run. And I hope it is, because I thought he looked really tired and he looked like he was in a lot of pain in the ring. I don't want to see that guy wrestle anymore. I would just like him to, you know, just retire quietly. I mean, in a sense, it sets up a Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens comeback. So it does set that up. So I'm not saying it was useless, because it wasn't. But I just feel like there was a lot of things wrong with it. It did achieve an objective in the sense that we've now got this quartet, this heel quartet, and Murphy has got a new role. But I'm not really, it didn't really, you know, fireworks weren't going off for me, Kenny. You know, what did you think?
I thought there was good elements to it. I think that Buddy Murphy, this will be good for him long term to be involved with the group, because otherwise I think he's just going to be stuck in this, you know, mid-card limbo. But the thing, Seth Rollins is really going to have to step up soon, because this group is really going to be dependent on him and how much he's going to bring it. So he needs to step up more. He needs to be more exciting as a performer. We need to see some of that 2015 heel Seth Rollins that brought him to the dance. That's what he needs to bring out to make the group a success. I hope that he does. I loved Kevin Owens kind of like run up the ramp off the stage. I thought that was a really great spot. Big Show can hardly move. God bless him. But overall, I thought it was like, at the end of it, I was like, the Murphy thing, I'm intrigued. It's not the most exciting thing in the world, but I'm intrigued. So I walked away from Raw kind of thinking, I mean, there was points that, you know, Mojo Rawley and the War Raiders and all that, or the Viking Raiders, I couldn't really care less about. But there was some stuff on it that made me think that they have directions, and I'm hoping that it's going to go somewhere. And that next week, when we get the go-home show for the Rumble, they're going to do some stuff to really get you hyped. And what my question for you was going to be, do you think Brock Lesnar goes the hour in the Rumble match?
No, I don't think so. I just can't see him going an hour. I mean, although it would be amusing if he did have to go the hour. And I think lots of people, knowing how much he gets paid and how short many of his main event matches have been, I think lots of people would like to see him go right to the end and for Drew McIntyre to eliminate him, setting up the WrestleMania match. That would be the ideal outcome. I mean, that would be hilarious if Lesnar actually had to work for his money rather than just being in there for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. I can't see it. I know people would say, well, Paul Heyman, whenever he makes his spoilers, they always come true. But I never see a time when they don't. And it's hard for me to believe that Lesnar's really going to go an hour. I mean, you know, can you imagine if Lesnar's face, if he was told, oh, sorry, Brock, you're going to have to go an hour out there. Can you imagine his response, Kenny?
It's not going to be good. It's not going to be a good response. But then, you know what? Sometimes Brock surprises you and does stuff that you kind of go, I wasn't expecting that. So I hope he does. I hope he does something that surprises us. But I've got to say, Lesnar being the Rumble, I think, does add a lot more interest to the match. So yeah. I think it's been a good decision to put him in there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. But and also because they haven't got anyone else prepared, readied for Lesnar to face at Royal Rumble. So by putting him in the Rumble, you know, it means that he's on the number two show of the year in a big role. And people will be interested to see how he does. I think the other problem as well is if he's in the match too long, a lot of the also-rans would have to be eliminated exceedingly quickly by Brock Lesnar in order to maintain, safeguard his image as, you know, the guy who's, you know, the beast, the man who can basically beat anyone in the company. So, I mean, if he's in there, there's a lot of people who just wouldn't stand any chance against him at all. So if he were out there too long, I think it could have a detrimental effect on his aura. But I mean, I think it will be interesting to see how he does. And I think Heyman will be great at ringside as Lesnar's in there. I think the longer he's in, the better. But I don't think he should be in there an hour. I think maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes would be good. And I think Heyman could be a barrel of laughs at ringside with him, you know, selling Lesnar almost getting eliminated, you know, people ganging up on him. And there's a lot of things they can set up for the future there, you know, with Lesnar in the ring. And I think there's a lot of people on the roster as well who I think would really look forward to the opportunity to do something with Lesnar because, you know, let's face it, he only makes a part-timer and he only works with certain people. So I think it definitely enhances the match. His title's not going to be on the line. That I mean, if it was going to be on the line in the match, I think we would know about it by now, wouldn't we?
Yeah, so it's not going to be on the line. So
yeah, we should state that. But absolutely, I mean, given where they are, or rather their failure to create any new stars who could potentially wrestle Brock Lesnar. I mean, not that it would have been that difficult for them to set somebody up for Lesnar to wrestle on the undercard, given that they've, you know, taken the course of action or chosen the course of action or that they have. I think it does work, and it does make the Rumble more interesting.
Well, that's it for us. We are going to be back later on this week with the Overrun, where we will do some questions from you guys, the listeners, because, you know, we don't get to do it as much as we'd like to, so we'll put some questions out there later on this week and hear what you want us to talk about. Finn, do you have any plugs for us this week? I know we've got a What's Going Down coming soon on Patreon, where we're going to get your thoughts on some other stuff that we haven't got to in the podcast, but anything else going on that you want to let the listeners know about?
Well, not really, just the usual stuff. When people know where I am on Twitter and Facebook, then my website is. So nothing really to plug. So you get those plugs out there, Kenny.
Sure. Okay. So you can go to insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets for tickets to our live events with JR and Conrad Thompson next month, Kenny Omega in April. You can listen to this podcast 24 hours early over on Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you get bonus content, articles from Finn, interviews sometimes, an Overrun with us as well. Finn drops in for the retro pay-per-views. We'll be doing Royal Rumble 2000 later on this month. Well worth checking out if you have the chance. And also youtube.com/insidetheropes, where we do interviews. We've got stuff up there with Triple H from the weekend. We're going to have stuff coming up with William Regal and a lot of the NXT UK people. I'm going to be in London tomorrow doing some interview content with people. That's going to be fun. So lots coming up that we hope that you will check out. So that's it for us. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.